part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
PartTimeFanboy.com.
This is Part-Time Fanboy, and my name is Christian Horn, and I have a special guest on the line. I have author Jason Fry, who is a writer who has written several Star Wars books. I mean, not just one, two, or three. I'm looking at your Wikipedia entry, and it's something like, it looks like close to 20 books, right?
Yeah, I think if you throw in short stories, I'm actually over 30 by now.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And let me take a short second to thank my brother-in-law, Dan Tuig of Metz Police, who connected us, because with the Force Awakens coming out, I wanted to speak to a true Star Wars nerd. And it looks like he hooked me up with the right guy, correct?
Yeah, I would definitely qualify as a Star Wars nerd. And yeah, I have to thank Dan as well. You know, Metz Police is run by my pal Shannon Shark.
Uh-huh.
And Shannon and I get together for I Just As Soon Kiss a Mookie,
uh-huh.
which we say with no fear of being challenged is the best New York Mets/Star Wars podcast in the world. So, we're hoping to have Dan on later this week. So,
oh, are you really?
We're looking forward to that, and I'm glad he hooked you and me up.
Is he coming to talk about Star Wars?
Shannon runs the show, so I'm not sure what he has in mind.
Gotcha.
I think we're talking about the upcoming Queens baseball convention.
Oh,
so,
okay.
We'll see. But we always, even when we have baseball people, we always grill them on Star Wars a little. And, you know, the fact that it's Star Wars, like, you know, everybody has an opinion and something to say, so it's pretty fun.
Yeah, I don't know how you combine those two subjects, so I'll have to, everyone should track that podcast down. And what's it called again? I'd Just As Soon Kiss a Mookie. A Mookie, all right.
After Mookie Wilson.
And is that I'dJustAsSoonKissAMookie.com or?
Oh, goodness, I should know this, but I don't.
you
can always find it through MetsPolice.com, or we're on iTunes and every other place you would find podcasts.
Gotcha. I'm going to have to check that out. I'm not a sports guy, but I have become a Star Wars guy once again after this movie. I guess I should start out by saying that, you know, I was a huge, you know, Star Wars fan, like when those movies first came out. Like, I collected the action figures and I loved them for years and years and years and years. And I sort of don't want to get into an awkward situation with you, because I was one of those people that the prequels really killed it for me, like just destroyed it for me. Like, I could not, you know, after Darth Vader stood up on that table at the end of that third movie and just went, no, like I kind of was done with it. So I just felt like insulted. And, you know, just kind of like, I don't need to go back to this anymore, you know? And those films kind of tainted the originals for me in a way, because they changed the way that I saw Darth Vader very much. So I guess my question to you is, or one of my questions is sort of like, you retained your faith through those, right? Like, those didn't hurt you at all, because you've written books on that era of Star Wars, like a lot of Clone Wars stuff, correct?
Yeah. The books I've written cover every era. You know, to be a little diplomatic, I will certainly say that there are Star Wars movies I love more than others.
Sure.
That's certainly true. But one of the things that's so interesting about Star Wars is you really do get very different reactions from people, not across the board, but generally depending how old they are. So Star Wars is really kind of self-renewing. I mean, you have fans who, you know, came to it like I did through the original trilogy, and, you know, that's kind of always going to be dearest to their hearts.
Yeah.
And you have fans who, you know, learned about Star Wars through the prequels who really love those movies, as well as, you know, fans who got there through the Clone Wars show or through Rebels, or now The Force Awakens. So, you know, it really is kind of self-renewing, which is great. And, you know, I think one of the things that's been so heartening about this movie, about Episode 7, is it really does seem to have united all these Star Wars fans. I mean, certainly there are, you know, there are fans that didn't quite work for. That's always going to be true. But for the most part, you know, all the kind of Star Wars tribes, your old original trilogy, prequel, folk, Clone Wars, Rebels, et cetera, seem to have really liked the new movie. And that's been a lot of fun to see.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I've seen it twice. How many times have you seen it at this point?
Three times.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to go the day before it opened with my son.
Who, oh, great.
You know, briefly thought I was acceptably cool because of that. And then went back and saw it with my dad over Christmas. And I just took my wife and we saw it in like Super IMAX 3D.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, so it's been fun. And I actually, you know, another sign of a good movie is I think enjoyed it most the third time. I started noticing, you know, kind of quiet moments and little grace notes that I'd missed in the two viewings. So yeah, that's been terrific. And hey, judging from the business it's doing, there seems to be a lot of repeat viewing. So that's a terrific thing for the movie and for the franchise.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's definitely really interesting for me because, like I said, I mean, the prequels really kind of like killed it for me. Like I was just like, I'm done with this. I had my time. You know, I loved Star Wars and like those first three movie, those, well, not first three, but you know what I mean? The prequels very much took me away from a place of like joy for the franchise. And then the Clone Wars TV show came out and I tried to watch that and I couldn't quite get into it. I was like, oh, they're doing something different. Like, this is interesting. They're kind of expanding on it. And it wasn't until Rebels came out and I started watching them with my daughter, who's 8 years old. And she was really into, you know, the first season. She really enjoyed watching them and watching those through her eyes and with completely like new characters that didn't have like a ton of baggage for me really sort of like reignited that spark. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're saying. You know, my son is 13 and I think what really made him like Star Wars was Clone Wars. And I think part of it was also that, you know, with Clone Wars, he could start on the same footing as everybody else. He didn't feel like he'd missed out on, you know, 30 years of stuff or had all this stuff to catch up on.
Sure.
Which was great. Did your daughter like the new movie?
Oh, yeah, she loved it. I mean, my wife really liked it, too. And I really liked it. Like, I was very surprised because, well, the way it went, like, it's kind of, as these things all are, it's a very sort of like personal experience, especially when you're talking about something that you love or have loved at one point, which is Star Wars. And, you know, for months and months, you know, the company that I work for, we do a lot of Star Wars stuff too. And it's just been a buildup, you know, of it coming, you know. And so I was getting very excited to take her to opening night. Like I got the tickets. It was Friday night, actually. I think technically Thursday was opening night, but Friday night.
Technically.
Yeah, I guess technically, but Friday night we were getting ready to go and I was literally driving to the theater from work and I get a call from my wife and she's like, Tallinn, which is my daughter's name, has just thrown up. We're not going to the movie.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And
oh, no.
Yeah, I know. And so my wife was super understanding and was like, you know, we've already got the tickets. You're on your way there. I'll take care of her. You go see the movie. And I didn't want to, but I was already like halfway there. And I was like, all right, I will go and sit. And it's very interesting. And I've learned this in the past that seeing a movie, so many things can change depending on the circumstances. And I liked it the first time, but there were a lot of things that I was sitting there like nitpicking at. And then when I went the second time to see it with my family, you know, like a couple of days later after my daughter had recouped, I enjoyed it even more. It was just even more fun, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right. It's a very different experience depending on Yeah. Kind of what's going on around you.
Yeah. And the thing that really stood out to me the most was that the second time I didn't have like all this sort of like Star Wars baggage. Like I was watching it again with like, okay, I've already seen it. Like that weight of expectation is off my shoulders. Now, how can I enjoy this? And I really loved it the second time even more.
Yes. Yeah. No, I, you know, that's a really tough experience for any filmmaker, for any creative person. And, you know, I mean, hats off to J.J. Abrams even more because, I mean, yeah, no one can possibly replicate the experience of, you know, being a kid in May 1977 when Star Wars was the movie. That's gone. So Everybody else is kind of, you know, whatever they do, whether it's a book or a TV show or a movie, you know, that's the first thing. They're coming and confronting audience expectations. And, yeah, that's really tough. So, you know, it's another sign of this movie really delivering that, you know, it's overcome that, which is great.
Yeah. Well, how did this work for you? Because you wrote, I mean, right now you've got like Star Wars Raid Survival Guide out, and it looks like you've got Star Wars The Force Awakens, The Incredible Cross Sections. There must be some stuff that's leaked out to you to be able to write those books. Did you know stuff beforehand, or was everything? Like,
yeah,
really?
I did. No, I did. You know, I knew what I needed to know for various projects that I did with Lucasfilm and Disney, and you know, depending on the project, that ranged from a little to eventually quite a bit. So, yeah, I mean, so the, you know, that experience of being surprised, et cetera, in the movie theater wasn't there for me. But that's, you know, that's just part of the deal in doing the jobs that I do and that I love doing. But, you know, what I found really interesting was I still very much enjoyed the movie. I mean, that was definitely, I think, part of my first viewing was I was kind of sitting there with a clipboard in my head thinking about, you know, how well had I done in these various books I'd written, et cetera, and kind of worrying about that, as well as just, you know, really thinking like how was the story going to translate. So so after that first time, I mean, I still really enjoyed the first viewing, but after that first time, I think, you know, in a way similar to your experience, I was free of that and really could just sit back and just enjoy it, which was great.
Sure. And so how did it sort of play out for you? I mean, it seems like you enjoyed it, but I mean, I guess in comparison to the prequels, it sounds like you feel like they pulled off what they needed to pull off.
I've always just been interested in the overall story and the setting and how it kind of fits together. And so, you know, even when a certain movie or frankly a book or a TV show, even if I feel as a reader or a viewer that it doesn't particularly work or had some, had some things that didn't quite connect, you know, I still like having another piece of the Star Wars tapestry to think about and that goes into the overall story that you can, that you can use to seed further stories. So that's always an interesting, that's always a perspective I have, in these things.
Yeah.
But, that's part of being a storyteller in this is you always have this kind of double vision and, you know, you're always kind of thinking about storytelling and projects and how to make those work. But, you know, at the same time, I'm really glad that I've never lost this. You know, you just also get to be a fan and kind of sit back and take it in. And, you know, I will say that one reason that I think Star Wars has remained such the enormous franchise it is, I mean, I can't think of a single person I've ever known at Lucasfilm or now at Disney involved with Star Wars who's also not a huge fan.
Yeah.
I mean, they just, you know, they never lose that and remain just, you know, enormous fans of Star Wars, which, you know, is not true in every intellectual property of that scale.
Yeah.
And I think that's been great for Star Wars and I think that will continue and I think that's terrific.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how do you feel about some... Because it's really interesting because there's been a lot of like nitpicking going on, you know, and I've seen people on Facebook and friends like that. And while I do admit to me, because I mean, there's people saying like, oh, this is just a remake of A New Hope. And I don't think that at all. I think that there are elements that are familiar, but I think that was part of what J.J. Abrams was trying to do, because in my opinion, just my opinion, I feel that the prequels sort of, to fans of my generation, did so much kind of damage that you had to sort of have this new movie be like, hey, this is Star Wars. Like, this is Star Wars. What do you think about some of the critiques that it's been getting as far as like people saying like, oh, there's nothing original, or why couldn't they have given us a completely original story? I sort of feel like, you know, in my opinion, that maybe doing something like that might have been too drastic a shift. What do you feel?
It's interesting. I don't really, it's funny, as a Star Wars writer, I have a reputation for being pretty good at continuity, etc. But
yeah,
I don't really watch movies that way. I really just try to get sucked into the story, and enjoy it, and that certainly worked for me. But I mean, one thing I will say is that, you know, Star Wars has always kind of rhymed between episodes. If you think about, you know, Episode One on the surface actually didn't follow a too dissimilar path from the original Star Wars either. I mean, it's a young boy from Tatooine who, you know, is an expert pilot that no one's heard of, who, you know, blows up essentially a big space station to save a female member of royalty and discovers his power of the Force. I mean, you know, I just described Episode One. I also described Episode Four. So,
yeah.
You know, Star Wars has always rhymed in that way. I mean, what I took from The Force Awakens, and, you know, one thing I firmly believe is, you know, it's always a losing game to kind of critique other people's experience of a story. I mean, it's
sure.
their own. It's not yours. So they can, you know, they'd see things however they want. But, you know, what I took from it was I saw the way it rhymed, but really enjoyed some of the ways, big and small, that the story was quite different. But most of all, I just really loved the characters and the performances. You know, Daisy Ridley, John Boyega,
yeah,
Oscar Isaac, and Adam Driver, I just all thought were terrific.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, they'd been given a lot to work with in terms of their characters. They're also just terrific actors. And watching the chemistry between them was just a lot of fun. And I found, you know, within a couple of minutes, just, you know, watching Daisy Ridley on screen, I was able to stop, you know, get out of kind of my Star Wars writer mode and stop checking boxes and really just enjoy what I think is really just an extraordinary performance. So,
yeah.
I mean, that was terrific.
Yeah, it was very interesting for me because, you know, I sat down to watch it, and especially the second time, I was like, oh, you know, let me think as I'm watching it. And I felt that the movie, this one, you know, moved along like really well. And, you know, the introductions of the new characters were fantastic. I mean, the one thing, especially as somebody who's not so, you know, like, let's say, ensconced into the mythology as maybe you are, was the John Boyega, like, sort of stormtrooper thing, where, you know, even watching the prequels, I never knew, like, are stormtroopers clones? Are they robots? Are they cyborgs? Like, I don't know anything about this. And just having a sort of, like, stormtrooper sort of stop and be like, hey, I'm kind of not into this. I don't want to do this anymore. Like, that, for me, was very interesting. It was something that just hadn't really been explored before. So, like, whenever I'm hearing, like, certain people say, like, oh, it's just sort of a rehash, and I'm like, well, no, there's familiar elements, but there's enough of a difference where I'm going, like, hey, I'm interested. Like, I'm into this, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it's the same thing with Rey, Daisy Ridley's character. I mean, you know, we're... you know, Anakin Skywalker and Luke Skywalker desperately wanted to get off their lousy desert planet.
Yeah.
You know, she's the hero, but she's trying to go back all the time. And everybody's like, what are you going back there for? That was interesting. The other thing I really loved with, I thought it was very interesting to have Kylo Ren be a villain who's really unsure of himself and trying essentially to prove himself as a villain.
Yeah.
Like, usually what you get from the protagonist.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really interesting thing to play with. So, you know, there's a lot going on there that I really enjoyed, both as just a fan sitting there in the theater munching my popcorn and having fun, but also, you know, as a storyteller thinking about the choices that were made and seeing how they play out. So, it was great. I'm sure I'll go see it again, probably a few more times.
You'll probably be buying the Blu-ray, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because, you know, I was, the second time I watched it, I was very much like, oh, wow, enjoying the introduction of the new characters. And then Han Solo shows up. And I was like, oh, that for me is kind of when it stopped a little bit. But the thing that really made me happy was like Harrison Ford, he really came to play. Like he was not, like I don't recall a Harrison Ford performance that I've seen in years, like in just any of the other movies, which he hasn't been doing a lot, but like he was just into it. Like he was Han Solo, and it was just, I was so happy to see that, you know?
Yeah, no, I was amused this summer where they were talking to J.J. Abrams about working with Ford, and he said, you know, I was really working on him not to do that growly thing. You know, he felt he had done in recent movies, which, you know, I thought was even before, you know, seeing anything in the movie, I thought it was a great sign that, you know, J.J. was not in awe of Harrison Ford. He was the director in this, and, you know, Ford was the actor. I mean, a legendary, enormously skilled actor, but the actor. And, yeah. You know, and I think the performance reflects that. I mean, it was a terrific performance. And as you say, he was, you know, he was all in. There's no distance between the actor and the material, and it was great. And, you know, there's a lot of that. It's, you know, also having, you know, some good writing to fit the character that, you know, he seems to really responded to, and also having some terrific actors to kind of bounce things off of. So, yeah, all of that. You know, I'll be a bit vague about this, just in case we have, you know, anybody in the audience who hasn't seen it yet, so spoilers. But, you know, one of the things that's really, I thought has been terrific in all the showings where I've seen it is, you know, Han and Chewie showing up, of course, gets a huge cheer from the audience,
yeah,
as you would expect. But, you know, the climax with Rey, and a big moment for Rey at all the showings I saw, also got a huge cheer. And
yeah,
for me, I mean, that was really just a terrific sign for Star Wars and a sign of a good movie. I mean, because there's no nostalgia at play there at all. I mean,
yeah,
those are characters you met 2 hours ago, and you know, for the audience to react like that was, I was really happy. And I was one of them. I was cheering too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's sort of the thing, is I feel like J.J. Abrams was so good at capturing the spirit of the original trilogy or elements of it that so many people have just like discounted that and been like, oh, this is just a remake. And I'm like, no, I don't see that at all. I don't see it as a remake. I see that it's using familiar elements, but, you know, like you said, some of the prequels as well kind of like mimicked a bit of the storyline of the original movie. So I can see where people are sort of like, oh, you know, this was not original enough. I mean, I know certainly, you know, the bigger Death Star for me was like, really? There was a part of me that I was like, we're going to do this again? But then I sort of started thinking about it a little bit. And, you know, I kept thinking about sort of like terrorist organizations or dictatorships and stuff like that. And quite honestly, they're so incredibly repetitive. Even when, you know, you think about something like, say, the Taliban, they're just keep trying to blow stuff up, a bigger bomb. We want this bomb. We want this, you know, we want to make a bigger splash. You know what I mean? And certainly they did sort of with 9/11 or whatever. But it just seems to me like an organization that has been so disgraced in the past with a device that they had so much hubris or pride wrapped up in. Why wouldn't they just be like, this time we're going to do it right? You know, this time it's going to be so big that nobody can stop it, right? I mean, that was sort of where my mind went. It's just that, you know, a lot of these sort of like even comic book villains or whatever, they're trying to do the same thing over and over again. So I kind of understood it With the second viewing. The first viewing, I was very much like, really? We're going this way again? Like, we're going to do this again? But J.J. Abrams did such a good job of capturing the action and, you know, keeping the momentum going that, you know, and there's that one shot where they fire the weapon and the general, I can't remember his name, the sort of like fair-haired guy, and he looks into the horizon and, you know, it's like reflecting in his eyeballs. And I was just like, that's an amazing shot. Like just some of the artistry and some of the cinematography I thought was fantastic.
Yeah, no, the super weapon thing is kind of interesting. It's a case where, I mean, normally I line up much more with the audience who are there just to enjoy the film than I do with the nitpickers. But, you know, this is kind of a case where actually the nitpicker case is probably the better one. I mean, you know, the first Death Star got blown up because somebody left an exhaust port unshielded. You know, that's an awfully small flaw. And then, you know, the second one was going to fix that flaw, but, you know, they were able to blow it up before it was complete. So, you know, those are actually fairly small problems. It's not the concept of the weapon. I mean, they certainly showed that that works. So why would you abandon it? It's a little bit like if you go back to Jurassic Park. I remember when Jurassic Park came out, you know, all the evening shows like Nightline, et cetera, you know, to grab ratings had various paleontologists on, and everybody was supposed to talk about sort of the dangers of cloning dinosaurs. They had Robert Baker, this great dinosaur expert, who was like, Jurassic Park isn't a failure of, you know, man's hubris and cloning dinosaurs, it's a failure of zookeeping. I was like, he's right. You know, the lesson here isn't don't clone dinosaurs, it's, you know, don't build parks with fences that go out. I don't know. So you score one for the nitpickers. But, you know, however people came down on it, you know, that's, I mean, you know, part of the success of the movie. It's fun to analyze it in various ways, but it's also, you know, it's just fast and funny, and it's got a lot of action and a lot of stuff happens.
Sure.
Terrific way to spend 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Yeah. And so are you working on, and obviously you can't answer any specifics, but do you know what's coming for the second one? Like, have you been on any meetings about it? Like, do you, like, has anyone like floated like, hey, you want to write this book about this character? Or is that still like in your work process, like couple years down the line?
Well, I mean, the good thing about this kind of work is that, I mean, whatever projects I'm doing, it's never been a problem in terms of Lucasfilm or Disney getting me what I need to know to do the project. So, so that's always good. But I mean, beyond that, I've learned to be very careful. Other than that,
and, of course,
you know, I make sure never to announce anything until the publisher or the licensee has announced it.
So, obviously, you know not to leak stuff. But I guess my question. One of my questions to you is, well, not related to that, is how did you get into this? Like, how did you become a Star Wars writer? You know, because obviously you've been a fan, I'm assuming, since the original movies?
Oh, yeah, since May 77. I was 8 years old, which is absolutely perfect age. And, I mean, from the moment I saw Darth Vader's Star Destroyer go overhead, I was like, wow, the world's different. This is great. And I never lost that. I've just been lucky enough to get to tell some stories within that setting.
Yeah. Yeah.
But how did I get into it? It really goes back to the late 90s. I mean, I was always a huge fan, and I had a particular interest actually in Star Wars geography. Like, I really wanted to know how all these planets fit together. Like, you know, when they go from Tatooine to Alderaan, run into the Death Star, I was like, what does that look like on a map? How would that work? And I hooked up with a good friend of mine. We became friends back in the days of America Online, of all things.
Oh, wow.
I had some terrific Star Wars boards. And I became friends with Dan Wallace, who wrote a book for Lucasfilm The Essential Guide to Planets and Moons. He shared my interest in this stuff, and Dan and I just kind of endlessly pitched this book, The Atlas of the Star Wars Galaxy.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, I also started working for the Star Wars Insider, and okay. I started out as their books columnist.
Oh, okay.
So I kind of put those two things together, and eventually Dan and I just kind of hounded people to let us write this dream Star Wars book that we had never been able to get out of our heads. And I think eventually just because it was pretty obvious that we were going to drive them crazy until they gave in, Del Rey decided to let us give it a try. But so the Essential Atlas came out. That was just, you know, a dream come true project. And I was doing things. I'd been the Insider columnist for a while when the Clone Wars was about to start. And DK Books came to me and asked if I would do the Clone Wars visual guide.
Yeah.
Ahead of the first season in the movie. So I did that. And, you know, just you try to do a good job and hope that one thing leads to another. And over time, I've started doing adult fiction within Star Wars, which was really exciting for me because I was getting to, you know, come up with some of my own characters and own stories and, you know, do some adult fiction short stories and just move from there.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's really interesting. So, but I mean, had you written previously? I mean, how did you know who to pitch, how to pitch? Like, was it just you discovered this through being online or like how did that work for you?
Oh, well, Dan had connections. He was more established than I was and was kind enough to speak up for me and suggest, you know, that I could be a co-writer on some stuff. So I'm very grateful to him for that. But speaking more broadly, and I'm glad you brought this up because this is something that I get asked a lot. And sometimes aspiring writers don't want to hear it, but I feel like it's my job to tell them. And the most important thing was that I had been a journalist for a long time. I was working for the Wall Street Journal Online. And so I was a professional writer.
Gotcha.
A professional journalist. And, you know, that meant that any editor looking at an idea for me knew that at least I could hit a deadline, I was reliable, you know, I could keep quiet about stuff I had to keep quiet about, et cetera.
Sure.
You know, one thing I tell writers who want to do this is that, you know, that, yes, I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I have been since I was 8 years old, but that was really not at all why I got to write Star Wars books. I mean, that was a coincidence, if anything. You know, fandom is not something that publishers look for. If anything, sometimes it can get in the way.
Interesting.
What they want above all else is, you know, is professionals, is someone who has a track record and, you know, they are confident can do the job and deliver what's needed. And so, you know, my first advice for writers who want to do this kind of thing is you have to go out and get a professional track record. And,
gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, the good news about that, though, is it doesn't particularly matter what track record that was. I mean, I had covered environmental science, technology.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you were at the Wall Street Journal and you weren't writing about Star Wars at the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's, you know, the actual subject matter or the place where you get that track record isn't as important as getting it. But, you know, the other thing I tell people is, I mean, it's funny. I became a journalist really because I just love to write. And, you know, I love to tell stories. And if I couldn't tell a story of my own, I was at least pretty happy learning that stuff and explaining it to other folks. You know, that was why I became a journalist. And ultimately, as I was able to move and start writing fiction and get to write Star Wars. But, you know, I the other thing I tell people is don't start off with your goal is I want to write a Star Wars book or I want to write a Transformers book or whatever it is. Because, you know, that's even if things go right, even if you get all the luck that you're going to need for that to happen, I mean, it's still just years and years and years. I mean, I think if I reran the script of my life trying to do this, that it probably wouldn't happen because, you know, I got really lucky in some ways. So, you know, I tell people if that's your starting goal, you're probably going to wind up disappointed. And, you know, your starting goal instead should be just to really love writing.
Yeah.
And, you know, be really want to do that, whatever form it takes. Because, I mean, if that's your goal, then, you know, then you'll have that, whatever happens. And that'll sustain you through, you know, good times and bad and good luck and bad luck. So, you know, people don't want to hear that. And I feel bad telling it to them. But, you know, I think to go about it the other way, I mean, you're probably going to wind up disappointed. There's just so much that has to go right, even if you work really, really hard.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're saying, much like anything, it's sort of like embrace the craft first before the subject matter, correct? Like embrace the love of the craft.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, but you know, the good flip side of that is, I mean, when I started out as a writer right out of college, I mean, I was absolutely terrified because I didn't have any idea how to get to do what at the time I really wanted to do. And, you know, it was just kind of paralyzing trying to figure out how to do that. Which at the time, you know, what I wanted to write was, you know, kind of literary fiction.
Sure.
And, you know, what I tell kids or former kids, anybody who wants to hear it, is if you look at, you know, my career and all the things I've done, it looks absolutely insane. It looks like, you know, one of those family circus cartoons is, you know, Jeffy running around the neighborhood all day. I mean, it doesn't look like it makes any sense.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's okay. Just if you're able to just stay focused on doing the thing you really love and, you know, let yourself relax a bit about exactly what form it takes, then opportunities present themselves and you find a way.
Yeah.
And there's no way it's going to match whatever you have in your head at 19 or 22, but that's all right. And I think if I'd known that, I probably would have been a lot less scared at the beginning.
Gotcha. Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. So can I ask you a question? I'm looking over your list of credits and you seem to write a lot of these. And I've always been curious how these things are written. The visual guides, like how does that work, especially with, say, because you said you had worked on the Clone Wars books before, mm-hmm. you know, the property had come out. Like, do they give you like visuals and then you're like, and you get a general idea of what the characters are like, and then you write? Because, you know, I have some of these sort of books, maybe not Star Wars, but like Marvel superheroes or like, you know, Superman, whatever, you know, the nerd stuff that I'm into. And I'm always wondering, it's like, how is that, like, say there's a new character and it's like, I don't know, like Jango Fett or something, right? And they're like, there's this guy, Jango Fett. Do they say like, here's what he looks like, here's, now write a description on him or something? Because that's what a lot of these books are. They're almost encyclopedic, right? Where it's like, this is what it is, and then this is what it's about, and this is what it does. So how does that work for you? How does that process, you know?
Every project is different, which is actually great as a writer, because, I mean, it prevents things from feeling stale because everything's going to be different. It depends. Like the first Clone Wars visual guide, for instance, the entire book was basically laid out in terms of subjects.
Okay.
And DK had chosen the art working with Lucasfilm. So, you know, I had basically finished pages, but then they'd have the text of kind of made up Latin words.
Uh-huh.
That looks like real text. And then I'd fill all those in. And so, you know, for that, they gave me a bunch of scripts, a bunch of descriptions of characters, weapons, et cetera. And then I would make that work. And so, you know, the challenge for that book was figuring out, you know, how do you, on some pages, like, you're kind of telling a story within a spread. You're thinking about how the reader's going to read it and take in information and make sure the art is supporting that. You know, so that was one job there. I did two more Clone Wars visual guides, and by the end, you know, I was picking, you know, this was going to be the subject of these pages, and then, you know, let me loose in the art archives and I'll go pick the art for them. So, you know, that was a very different process.
Oh, that's cool.
What wound up being a similar looking book. So it really all depends. And, you know, projects can also be different in, you know, sometimes you'll have art reference and a little bit about a character, but, you know, your job is to make up backstory and, you know, to kind of fill in the blanks on that character. And sometimes it'll be more, you know, there's all this established reference, you know, summarize this for someone new to it or for, you know, a reader who's 8 to 12 years old or whatever the case may be.
Sure.
So it really depends on the project. You know, it's certainly helpful to me that, you know, I know a lot about Star Wars and I have a pretty good memory for this stuff. But, you know, you also wind up depending on the owner of the franchise, whoever it is, to help you out and give you guidance.
Sure, sure. And then how does like a straight narrative go? Like, do you pitch something to them or do they say like, hey, you know, we've got a book that we want to do about Rey, you know, do you have any ideas? Or is that how that works? Or
Again, it's really dependent on the project. Like, gotcha. I mean, a book I have just out, Rey's Survival Guide, I mean, they knew what they wanted for that book was, you know, kind of a diary / survival guide in her voice that would be about Jakku. And then, you know, the challenge there was to kind of tell a story between the lines, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like say, you know, here's Rey's tips on surviving as a scavenger on Jakku, but in doing that, we're also going to tell her story kind of indirectly.
Sure.
You know, so that was an interesting project. And for that, you know, the publisher, in this case, Studio Fun, had done a couple of titles like that for the Rebels characters. So I had a model to go look at to
gotcha.
See what they wanted. For other things, I did a four-book series, the Servants of the Empire series, for their kids' books that tie in with Rebels.
Okay.
You know, that was kind of all over the map. Like, the first book was kind of a prequel to a character we'd meet on the show, explaining how he got to where he was. And so I was, you know, the show producers had created some of his backstory, but not all of it. And I had a free hand. The second one was included an episode of the show Rebels. That, you know, so I was incorporating that, but telling it from a different point of view and then telling things around it. And then the last two books, I was pretty much free to continue his story as I saw fit. So, you know, there in one series, you had, you know, this huge range of kind of approaches and goals and material that went into that. But, you know, that's kind of the fun of it. I mean, in this kind of work, you know, you're always working for a client, and the main goal, of course, is to make sure you deliver what they need. But, you know, one of the things that's great about working with Lucasfilm, with Disney, with the various publishers is, you know, within that, there's a lot of freedom for the individual writer, which I've really enjoyed.
Oh, that's great.
It's interesting. They, you know, a lot of Star Wars fans were very worried when Disney bought Lucasfilm, and you know, I understood that certainly.
Sure.
But you know, working with them, you know, look, they're books, they're products, they're meant to be in stores, be sold. I mean, let's not be silly about it. But you know, working with Lucasfilm and Disney, the dominant thing that everybody talks about and everybody tries to make right is the storytelling and making sure that you're telling. That you're coming up with a good story and then telling it to the best of your ability. And, you know, that's terrific. I really couldn't ask for more.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And you have your own series, correct? It's called The Jupiter Pirates?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Jupiter Pirates, published by HarperCollins. First two books, Hunt for the Hydra and Curse of the Iris, are already out in bookstores near you. The third one, The Rise of Earth, is coming out in June. Yeah, this is entirely my creation. I'll give you kind of the 30-second overview of it.
Sure, the elevator pitch.
Exactly. It's set in the 29th century, and Earth is the dominant power of the solar system and has former colonies in the outer planets who have broken away and are kind of in this uneasy tug of war with Earth over power in the solar system. And the story follows one family who they started out as pirates in the Jupiter system and have since become privateers, lawful pirates working for Jupiter. But the way it works is that they're a family. There's a family of space pirates, now privateers, who have their own ship. The mother is the captain. The father is the first mate. And the three kids are midshipmen on the pirate ship. And they have to work together as crewmates to, you know, stay alive during these dangerous adventures. But they're also competitors, because the captaincy of the ship gets handed down from one generation to the next, and only one of them can be the next captain. So they're simultaneously cooperating but also competing. And that's been a lot of fun. It's been a cool engine for storytelling that I really enjoyed. And you know, it gets at something I think is important in writing, and you know, that I've never been to Jupiter, never been on a spaceship, never been a pirate, never been any of those things. In fact, I don't even have siblings, but you know, all of us understand sibling rivalry, whether it's with actual siblings or with friends, and you know, that odd mix of competing with the people we love but also trying to support them, and you know, being part of a family and you know, having a legacy you aren't sure if you can live up to, and then sometimes finding out that you're not sure it's what you want to do, and all of those things. So you know, kids absolutely understand that because they live that every day. So, you know, that's Jupiter Pirates has been a lot of fun to do. And I'm really excited for the third book to get out there. And then we'll keep going through books 4 and 5 after that.
Oh, wow. So you're going to go past, it's not just a trilogy. It's like going to keep going.
Yeah, it's going to be 5 books in all. And some short stories along the way. In fact, if folks go to jupiterpirates.com, I don't have it done yet, but we should have a short story that'll be up there on the site for free. I'm hoping by the end of January, but you know, I also said by the end of December, and that didn't work out. So not to be George R. R. Martin, but as soon as I can.
Oh no, that's great. That's great. So this is also a sci-fi tale as well. I mean, it seems like, was Star Wars the thing that kicked it off for you? Or were you, like at 8, were you kind of like into stuff like that? Or was it just, was Star Wars the one that just like opened your eyes and you were like, oh my God, like I must be into this sort of, you know?
I always told stories. I always loved doing that. But, you know, yeah, when you're 8 years old and you see Star Wars, it's gonna be have a big effect on you. And,
gotcha.
Yeah, I can easily say that, you know, nothing was the same after I saw Star Wars. I'd say the biggest influence for Star Wars and Jupiter Pirates is that it's also space fantasy. Like, you know,
sure.
I take the part of physics that I like and ignore the parts that I don't.
So, yep.
Pirate ships get to dogfight in space, even though that wouldn't work, and things like that. But beyond that, it's interesting. I really love the Patrick O'Brien novels, Master and Commander, et cetera, which are
in the
British Royal Navy of the early late 18th, early 19th century. Iron Men, wooden ship. It's called. So that went in there, and also oddly, The Sopranos went in there. I was really struck. One of the things I really liked about The Sopranos was that, you know, Tony Soprano, his father was this old school mob boss.
Yeah.
And then his children aren't, it's pretty obvious, aren't really going to be part of the mafia at all.
Yeah.
And he's kind of stuck in the middle. So I always found that really interesting.
Gotcha.
It's funny though, that, you know, my publisher, the tagline they've used for Jupiter Pirates is that Battlestar Galactica meets Treasure Island.
Nice.
Which, you know, to be clear, I think is a great tagline, and it's not wrong by any means.
Yeah.
I'm always entertained because, I mean, I always thought it more of, you know, Patrick O'Brien meets The Sopranos. But that's That's not the best way to market a kid's book. So
yeah,
I let them do it.
That's a good idea. Yeah, no, I mean,
yeah,
that's a really interesting way of looking at The Sopranos. I never thought of it that way. That's really interesting. Oh, that's great. So would you say?
Yeah, it's funny. I have to reassure parents. I'm like, yeah, don't worry. It's not bloody and there's no strip bar. So it's
yeah.
All fun.
No strip bars at the edge of the solar system. Well, that's great. So would you say that Star Wars is though pretty much the thing? Like you're not like a Trekker or like a comic book guy. Like it was pretty much Star Wars that like, you know, got your nerd thing going.
Oh, Star Wars and baseball. Yeah, I'm
baseball.
A huge baseball nerd. And I'm Lord of the Rings a little. I love Tolkien and fantasy and stuff like that. But it's funny. I mean, Star Trek's interesting. I just don't have the gene for it. I give it a try a few years, and it just kind of won't take. I just sort of shrug my shoulders in bewilderment. I mean, I totally get that lots of people, including good friends of mine, love it, and that's great. There are also Trek people who are sort of mystified by Star Wars. So
it's
all right, as long as we all get along.
Yeah, and just so we're clear, you said that. I didn't say that. I don't want Star Wars nerds coming after me. So next year it's like Rogue One, correct? That's the next sort of like Star Wars spinoff, correct? It's like a prequel?
Yeah, in December, that's right.
So yeah, we've got a lot more Star Wars to look forward to. I think we can both safely say that you and I mean, I really enjoyed, you know, The Force Awakens. I mean, obviously there were things that, I mean, you can nitpick at anything, but I had a fun time. I didn't expect to like it as much as I did. And, you know, I can't, you know, I don't, you know, there's obviously, again, things that I would nitpick at, but for the most part, like, I just had fun. Like, I was sitting in the theater having fun, you know, and that's kind of what matters the most when it comes to movies like this for me, right?
Oh, for any storytelling. Yeah, I mean, I think about that all the time. I mean, I try to write, whether it's Jupiter Pirates or Star Wars, I mean, you know, when I have a story to tell, I don't shy away from big themes and stuff like that, and and try to get some art in there. But, you know, ultimately, as a storyteller, you're an entertainer. And if you can, you know, if you can occupy people and entertain them for an hour or two, that's your job. And, you know, that's job one. So, I loved it. And I'm so excited for Rogue One and the rest of Rebels and all the books that are coming. And then we get Episode 8 and May 2017.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Weird because you had to wait 3 years. So, you know, now only 18 months. That's great.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, that's what CGI does for you, right? Green screen and all that stuff speeds up the process a bit, I hope. Well, you know, I can't thank you enough for your time. I really appreciate you coming on to my show, Jason Fry. Your opinion and your time is very much appreciated. Thank you for coming on to Part-Time Fanboy.
Terrific. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for such good questions. It was great to talk to you.
Yeah. And your podcast is again called?
I Just As Soon Kiss a Mookie. Yeah, you can find that over at Mets Police. Or if folks want, they can check out jasonfried.tumblr.com. That's kind of where I keep people up to date on what I'm doing. Or on Twitter, I'm Jason C. Fry.
Oh, great.
Not Jason Fry. Jason Fry is a mobile programmer in the UK.
Okay.
A charming guy and actually a big Star Wars fan and much better looking than I am. So you should follow him too. I'm Jason C. Fry.
Follow anyone who's got the first name Jason and last name Fry on Twitter. And
there we
you'll
go.
Be good. You'll be good. So, and you have Star Wars Rey's Survival Guide out right now and Star Wars The Force Awakens, incredible cross sections, and the Jupiter Pirates. So everyone should be checking all that stuff out. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Likewise. Really enjoyed talking to you.
Yeah. And my name's Christian Horn, and this has been another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy.